we're going to eliminate FEMA.
I do not believe it is in the best interest of the American people to eliminate the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
One of those two people got fired for what they said. Which one do you think it was?
I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Oh, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yeah, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brant Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. What a week. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi. Action-packed.
I think we may have to hop all over the place a little bit today, as there is so much going on, as usual, all at once, that we may be missing the forest for the trees, or even the trees for the forest. I'm not sure. Trump is still on his grifter tour of the Middle East, back here at home. His personal criminal defense attorney turned United States Solicitor General was at the U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday for oral arguments in a case related to Trump's attempt to rewrite the U.S. Constitution regarding birthright citizenship by declaring that more than a century of understanding what it actually means is suddenly all wrong, and that babies born in this country are not actually entitled to citizenship if their parents are not citizens. Though this particular oral argument was on Thursday was actually focused on whether judges have the right to place a nationwide injunction on this ruling by Trump and other seemingly unlawful, unconstitutional executive orders, at least until the merits of the case can be argued and tried in the lower courts. All of which, I should note, every single lower court that has looked at Donald Trump's attempt to rewrite birthright citizenship has so far rejected that attempt to end birthright citizenship rights. And back here in Congress, Republican lawmakers in the U.S. House have been literally round-the-clocking it for the past day or two, trying to get through markup of their so-called One Big Beautiful Bill that encompasses all of Donald Trump's and Republicans' legislative agenda for this second term in one single bill. Since Trump is a child, apparently, and cannot stand the thought of doing it in smaller pieces over time. And when I say round-the-clocking it, I mean round-the-clocking it. House Speaker Mike Johnson is trying to ram the House version of this bill through before the Memorial Day break, coming up in about a week's time. So some of the major House committees have been staying in session literally overnight, throughout the night, to the point where members are actually falling asleep in their chairs, not even hearing their names when they're called out for a yay or nay vote on various things that are being marked up and edited. That, as Trump's so-called big, beautiful bill, will take away health care and nutritional food from literally millions of Americans in hopes of paying for at least some of the trillions of dollars in tax cuts that Trump and the Republicans hope to give largely to millionaires, billionaires, and huge corporations if this bill gets through. That is hardly all of the damage that this bill will do to Americans, though that's a big part of it, as we discussed in detail earlier this week with former White House budget analyst Bobby Kogan. A very helpful conversation, at least for me. If you missed it, you can, of course, download it for free at bradblog.com or, as they say, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, where there has been coverage of this bill with everything else going on, much of it is focusing on the sort of intra-party conflicts on the right, where so-called moderate Republicans from purple or blue districts don't want to cut Medicaid quite as much, or at least don't want to appear to be, you know, taking away health care from their thousands of their own constituents. And then on the other side of the Republican caucus, you've got hardliners who are angry because these cuts and much more are not enough for them. They would like to see more people die from a lack of health care, apparently, in order to help pay for tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires.
Priorities.
But all of this is being pushed forward so quickly that I'm concerned that the American people don't really notice what is being done to them with this bill, because, as it turns out, even many of the Republicans who are trying to push this multi-trillion dollar spending bill through at lightning speed do not even seem to fully understand the extent of what is being done, or at least they are claiming that they don't. As Politico reported last night, for example, the House Energy and Commerce Committee was 16 hours into a nearly 27-hour markup when it became clear that top Republicans on the panel weren't clear on what key Medicaid provisions in the legislation that they were actively debating would actually do. Couple that with confusion from what Politico describes as moderates over the committee's complex and controversial proposal, including language to dramatically overhaul the popular health safety net program with new work requirements and cost-sharing mandates, and it spells potential troubles ahead for the domestic policy mega bill central to enacting President Trump's domestic agenda. Politico notes it could also further complicate last-minute negotiations on the final text before the House is set to vote on the full package next week, especially with hardliners pushing for even deeper cuts. Quote, there were some items in there. It was the first time we were hearing of them, said Republican Congressman Ryan McKenzie, who represents a competitive district in Pennsylvania, which he just flipped red. McKenzie is among a group of supposedly centrist Republicans taken by surprise by some elements of the panel's Medicaid proposal. They have requested a meeting with the GOP leadership to talk through some of their concerns about provisions dealing with Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which we used to call food stamps, and which Republicans are also planning to cut back from about, the generous $2 per meal per day, or otherwise just make it simply harder to receive any of that, to save money, to help pay for huge tax cuts for rich people.
Stealing from the mouths of poor children so the rich can have more tax cuts.
Energy and Commerce Republicans rolled out their legislation late on Sunday night with hundreds of billions of dollars of cuts to health care for Americans with incomes at or just above poverty line, which the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has found would lead to at least 8 million Americans losing access to health care. Other analyses put that number at more than 13 million Americans who would lose their health care. As it turns out, the legislation would also disqualify Americans from getting health insurance at lower costs through the Affordable Care Act marketplace if they otherwise qualified to receive Medicaid but failed to meet the new work requirements, something that appeared to catch key GOP members of the committee by surprise. In the early morning Wednesday hours, according to Politico, members of both parties slogged through the wonky details of a provision that would add federal work requirements as a condition of enrolling in the safety net program. Now, as we discussed with Bobby Kogan earlier in the week, that would result in people who do work still losing their access to health care because the paperwork requirements become so onerous. And people who lose their jobs through no fault of their own. For example, if we head into a recession, as economists fear, thanks to Trump's trade wars, people who lose their job and their health care with it at the same time, well, they would lose eligibility for Medicaid because they're out of a job. At one point, Politico reports, a committee aide was asked to weigh in on the matter and confirm that, in fact, the GOP draft bill would, in fact, prevent low-income Americans from getting subsidized marketplace insurance plans through Obamacare if they did not meet a new, more stringent Medicaid work requirement. Basically, Democrats were explaining what the Republicans' bill would do to the Republican majority, who did not believe the Democrats until a Republican staffer had to be pulled forward and admit, yeah, if people were cut off from the Medicaid because of the work requirement, they would also not be eligible for any of the subsidies through the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare exchanges either under Medicaid for the same reasons. The broader exchange prompted attacks from Democrats outside the committee. Quote, they rushed this cruel bill to markup in the dead of night without even understanding what they were voting on, said Congressman Jerry Nadler, Democrat of New York, in a social media post. The American people deserve leaders who will fight for them, not destroy their lives, to hand billionaires another round of tax cuts, wrote Nadler. Nonetheless, as Reuters reported, Republicans in Congress advanced major elements of Trump's budget package on Wednesday as key committees approved tax cuts that, as it turns out, would also add trillions of dollars to the U.S. debt. That's Reuters saying it, not me. While cutting spending on health care for the poor and disabled.
So people may die, but that is a sacrifice that Republicans are willing to make.
Of course. Flexing their majority muscles in both the House Ways and Means Committee and the Energy and Commerce Committee, Reuters reports Republicans defeated all of the Democrats' amendments to the Republican written bill. Every single one of them, in a hearing that lasted for more than 24 hours. It amounts to an initial victory for Republicans, says Reuters, who will still have many hurdles to clear before they can get the sprawling package of tax cuts, spending hikes, and safety net reductions to Trump's desk to sign into law. His so-called big, beautiful bill, they know, would add trillions of dollars to the national debt load. The package calls for $4 trillion in additional borrowing. Though the total cost of the bill is still uncertain at this point, House Speaker Mike Johnson told reporters his party was on track to pass the massive legislation before the May 26 Memorial Day holiday. We'll see. But he still faces dissent from his own party. In addition to the fights, pretend or otherwise, between Republicans who claim to want to not take health care away from quite as many of their constituents, versus those Republicans who want much, much deeper spending cuts, no matter how many people it kills. Moderate Republican lawmakers from Democratic-led coastal states, including New York, New Jersey, and California, who are critical to the party's very narrow majority. Remember, Mike Johnson can only lose 3 votes here and still pass this thing. They say that the bill imposes too low a limit on how much state and local taxes can be deducted from constituents' federal income taxes. This is often referred to as state and local tax, or SALT deduction. And this is something that a lot of the so-called moderates and not-so-moderate folks, Republicans from coastal states, where the taxes are higher in New York, California, et cetera, is leading some of these folks to say, no, they're not going to vote for this. On the other hand, you got hardliners who are saying we are absolutely not going to allow any more SALT tax deductions. So we'll see. That's another area where they're fighting about this. The Energy and Commerce panel also spent much of Wednesday debating abortion, prescription drug prices, healthcare costs. Democrats failed in an attempt to remove a provision from the legislation prohibiting Medicaid funding from going to Planned Parenthood, a healthcare provider that is mainly for low-income women that provides abortion services only in states where it is legal to do so, and federal funding for abortions is already not allowed even in states where abortion is allowed. And yet, Republicans in this bill want to cut the funding to Planned Parenthood anyway. Planned Parenthood, which provides things like cancer screenings and pregnancy visits. So it's not even about abortion here. They just don't like Planned Parenthood because Planned Parenthood supports abortion. They just want to cut off still more people. Cut them off too. These tax cuts for rich people are not going to pay for themselves, you know. A third panel continued working on agriculture and nutrition issues, including a proposal to add a new work requirement for nutrition assistance via SNAP and shift some of the costs of that program to the states if the states feel like picking it up because, you know, they got a lot of extra money anyway, right? A third panel continued working on these things. We're looking at extending the tax cuts. That's the most important thing. Extending those tax cuts that were passed in Trump's first term, which are due to expire at the end of this year. And to do so, well, they're willing to offset some of that anyway by canceling clean, renewable, cheap energy programs. Energy programs because they were passed under Democratic President Joe Biden. Desi, you will have more on that in our latest Green News Report. I see you cringing already.
Yes, because they want to make it harder for consumers to save money because Republicans apparently really want you to spend all your money on fossil fuels.
And by the way, they're giving subsidies to the fossil fuel companies.
Of
Those
course.
Aren't being cut.
They get you coming and going.
The country's looming debt ceiling deadline is also coming up this summer and pushing Republicans to work quickly on this bill, since presumably this bill will also include an increase to the debt ceiling to help pay for all this. You know, the debt ceiling that Republicans refuse to increase whenever there's a Democrat in the White House. And then, of course, they race to increase it to allow for more spending by Republicans. The package would raise the debt limit by $4 trillion, and Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent urged lawmakers to act by mid-July in order to avoid default that would upend the global economy. When we get to that argument this summer, remember that, if Republicans didn't want to raise the debt limit by $4 trillion, that could easily be offset by not giving away $4 trillion in tax cuts to wealthy Americans who are going to receive an average of $68,000 in tax cuts next year if they are already millionaires. And yet they're quibbling about whether $2 per meal is just too much for the SNAP program. Those in the top 0.1%, they'll enjoy a tax cut next year of some $300,000 if all of this passes as planned. There's still a long way to go here as this bill has to pass the House, overcome all of these hurdles and more. Then it's got to pass in the Senate, where it'll face similar hurdles. Both bills then have to be reconciled and passed again in each House. But that's where we're going. And while it seems that Republicans cannot agree among themselves about what this bill should be or what's actually in it, don't worry. They will figure out a way to get this passed after all of their posturing is done for the folks back home. So that's happening at the same time as the Trump administration is already cutting off all kinds of services for the American people by executive fiat, lawfully or otherwise. For example, as we've been discussing of late in our Green News reports, as the Trump administration is telling Americans that they're going to shut down the Federal Emergency Management Agency, shut down FEMA. And they're seriously, which I don't know how that can possibly stand. They're doing all of this just weeks before we head into hurricane season and, oh yeah, wildfire season. Here's the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, declaring as much just a few weeks ago at one of Trump's pretend cabinet meetings for the cameras.
We're going to eliminate FEMA. So we've got a lot to do, but it's all good, and we're working hard, and we're going to make sure that we're continuing to do exactly what you promised.
It's all good. It's all good. We're shutting down the Federal Emergency Management Agency. I believe that was the first time that we had actually heard about that in late March. So Democratic Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro asked Noem about that during a subsequent House committee hearing.
What is your plan with regard to FEMA? Are you planning to eliminate FEMA? And I'm concerned that you're causing more dysfunction within the workforce that should be preparing itself for the pending hurricane season.
President Trump has been very clear since the beginning that he believes that FEMA and its response in many, many circumstances has failed the American people, and that FEMA as it exists today should be eliminated, and empowering states to respond to disasters with federal government support.
If you'll just, with all due respect, where is the evidence of the failure of FEMA?
So one of the worst things that the federal government can do is to stand up in front of the American public and say, we will be there, we will walk alongside you in the most horrible time of your life, and then never follow through on it.
Well, that's
what
not...
the president has said is he's sick and tired of federal agencies that pick and choose who wins and who loses. He wants to make sure that the federal government's commitment, when it makes a commitment, that it follows through. So he's going to empower states.
The federal government is abdicating its commitment to the American people who find themselves.
It did, certainly under Joe Biden's administration.
So I guess the plan here is to keep FEMA from failing the American people by eliminating FEMA entirely. They can't fail if they don't exist. Is that your takeaway?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I mean, she uses these words, empowering states, which is a bunch of nonsense. States are already in control of their disaster response, and they ask FEMA they request federal help, but FEMA does not take over. And, of course, this is all based on a bunch of propaganda that the Trump campaign put out before the election that were a bunch of lies about FEMA no facts back up any of their claims.
Lies that in North Carolina, after Hurricane Helene hit, that somehow the Biden administration was refusing FEMA aid.
Which is a lie.
In Republican areas. It was completely untrue. It's utter nonsense. But when Trump makes something up like that, we all have to pretend that he didn't. Administration officials have to, play along with this absolute lie, even if it means shutting down FEMA. More on that in a bit. So how are things going today at FEMA? Well, hurricane preparations at FEMA have slowed to a crawl, and the disaster relief agency, quote, is not ready for the June 1 start to the hurricane season. That according to an internal agency review obtained by CNN today. Prepared at the direction of new acting administrator David Richardson as part of a problem-solving exercise at FEMA, the document outlines the agency's struggles in recent months and raises a number of red flags ahead of hurricane season, including a general uncertainty around its mission, lack of coordination with states and other federal agencies, low morale, and new red tape that will likely slow responses. That according to an exclusive from CNN today, quote, as FEMA transforms to a smaller footprint, the intent for this hurricane season is not well understood, the document states. Thus, FEMA is not ready. President Trump and his allies have criticized FEMA for months as ineffective and unnecessary. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, whose department oversees FEMA, has vowed to eliminate the agency. FEMA's previous acting administrator, appointed by Trump, former Navy SEAL Cameron Hamilton, was fired just last week after daring to tell Congress that he did not believe the agency should actually be eliminated. Apparently, that was a firing offense for this administration. The new acting administrator, David Richardson, a DHS official, a former Marine combat veteran, and a martial arts instructor, not a disaster guy, is now in charge, and he is vowing to enforce Trump's agenda. In an all-hands meeting on the first day, on his first day at FEMA, Richardson warned staff, quote, "Don't get in my way," and told staffers he would, quote, "run right over," unquote, anyone who tries to prevent him from carrying out the president's mission. Remarks, by the way, that someone helpfully recorded.
So, don't get in my way. I know all the tricks, okay? I know them from Lance Corporals. I know them from staff sergeants, lieutenants, federal employees, my own employees, and indeed myself, okay? I've played the games too. Obfuscation, delay, undermining. If you're one of those 20% of the people and you think those tactics and techniques are going to help you, they will not, because I will run right over you. I will achieve the president's intent.
Unlike the people that were populating FEMA and working on behalf of all Americans, this guy is a military guy who's only there to carry out the president's orders, regardless of the impact or what the agency is supposed to be doing.
And, you know, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, well, there's a real morale builder for you. It's, you know, who wouldn't want to do their best for that guy? What a guy. So like Hamilton, Richardson, as I note, he also appears to have no prior experience managing natural disasters. As he takes the helm, according to CNN, he will continue to serve in his other role at the same time in the Countering Weapons of Mass Destruction office at DHS.
So he won't be distracted.
Most hurricane preparations have, quote, been derailed this year due to other activities like staffing and contracts. The document obtained by CNN states FEMA's operations, they report, have been siloed in recent months with limited coordination taking place across agency. Trainings have been paused. Critical exercises and collaborations with state partners have not happened. At the same time, agency morale has plummeted since Trump took office. More than a dozen FEMA officials told CNN as the staff endure public attacks from administration officials, lie detector tests. They're being forced to take lie detector tests at FEMA in order to root out media leaks and threats of more steep job cuts. Quote, if an organization hears it should be eliminated or abolished, the resources and cooperation are not there. The internal review states the intent cannot be wind down and be ready to support the nation in a major response. An operational leader at FEMA told CNN, quote, what Americans will see is a federal government that is either absent completely or, if present, sputtering to deliver response and recovery resources. A longtime FEMA official who works directly on disaster response told CNN, quote, I can't think of a more adverse way to be heading into hurricane season. We're going in with no confidence that when decisions have to be made in limited time that impact saving lives, that those decisions will have support. And as bad as FEMA's response may be to upcoming natural disasters like wildfires and hurricanes, it may be even more necessary, this response, and much more deadly because we may not even see it coming. One of last week's Green News reports, Desi reported on an open letter from five former heads of the National Weather Service warning about the gutting of the service and at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, which houses the Weather Service, and the threat that all of that now poses to the American public. Scientific American did a deep dive into that warning this week, which I'll link to in full when I post today's show at bradblog.com, because it is chilling. Quote, our worst nightmare is that weather forecast offices will be so understaffed that there will be needless loss of life, wrote the five former directors of the National Weather Service, directors from both Democratic and Republican administrations. Ultimately, storm experts say disruption caused by existing and proposed cuts will hit multiple fronts. An understaffed and underfunded National Weather Service could mean that a tornado warning does not come in time, that a hurricane forecast is off just enough so that the wrong coastal areas are evacuated, or that flights are less likely to be routed around turbulence. Quote, the net result is going to be massive economic harm, said climate scientist Daniel Swain. I believe we've had him on this show, have
we
not?
Yes, we have.
Quote, as we break these things, he said, eventually it will become painfully and unignorably obvious that we've broken what we've broken and how important it was, and it's going to be unbelievably expensive in the scramble to try and get it back, and we might not be able to get it back, he said. For the past 20 years, a little more than 4,000 National Weather Service staff members have put together 24/7 forecasts for the country's approximately 300 million people every day. Louis Usinelli, who was the National Weather Service director 2013 to 2022, he signed the open letter. He said, we have a more efficient level of staff compared to the number of people that we're serving than any other country in the world by two orders of magnitude. The service punches above its economic weight as well. It costs the average American about $4 per year. $4 per year. It is a cup of coffee, said Joanne Becker, president of the National Weather Service Employees Organization. That's the union that represents its workers. With one-third of the U.S. economy, from farming to trucking to tourism, being sensitive to weather and climate, the service provides an overall benefit of $100 billion to the economy, roughly 10 times what the service costs to run, which, by the way, remember, $4 is what it costs to you and me. They have long actually been short on staff. They need to add people, but now Trump is doing the opposite, and the warnings from those who previously ran the service are, as I said, chilling. Local weather service staffers are gone. Twice daily weather balloon launches all across the country, which are critical to helping determine exactly where storms and tornadoes and hurricanes may strike. Those are no longer happening in some places. 52 of the service's 122 field offices are now considered to be critically understaffed. Some offices that used to have 25 or 30 people now are down to 4 people. Being down so many people means, quote, you have to cut corners, and cutting corners is dangerous with lives and property at stake, says Jeff Masters, a writer at the Yale Climate Connection and a former hurricane hunter at NOAA. Yes, they are also firing the hurricane hunters. He said, in an era of climate change causing increased extreme weather, we should be spending more money on NOAA and the National Weather Service, not less. This is a very poor way to spend our tax dollars. But hey, trillions of dollars in tax cuts for rich people, that's got to be worth it. So this is bad. This is very bad. But don't say you haven't been warned, except maybe about approaching weather disasters. Maybe you haven't been warned about that because we're killing the Weather Service and we're doing away with FEMA. As I said, I'll link to the full story at Scientific American sounding that alarm. But as to the FEMA director who was fired last week after testifying that, in his opinion, FEMA should not be shut down, well, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt blamed his testimony, saying, quote, this individual testified saying something that was contrary to what the president believes. The new FEMA director, that Nazi-sounding guy who threatened to roll over staffers if they didn't shape up because the beatings will continue until morale improves, He told a right-wing radio station about the acting director who was fired, Cameron Hamilton, for daring to have an opinion and honestly testifying about it before Congress. Richardson said, quote, "Where Cam got sideways was when he expressed a personal opinion. And I don't have any personal opinion. I am here to execute President Trump's agenda." And that is a lesson that the head of FEMA's parent agency, the Department of Homeland Security, the head of that agency, Kristi Noem, well, she knows it all too well. Do not disagree with the president, no matter what, no matter how idiotic or false or untrue something that he said actually is. We'll pick up on that point after a quick break. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Indeed. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. So now that Maryland resident and father Venezuelan migrant Kilmar Abrego Garcia has been locked away in an El Salvadoran dungeon for 2 months, 2 months as of today, despite a court order that was supposed to prevent him from being deported and at all in the first place to El Salvador, and the administration's admission that they did so accidentally, and the Supreme Court's order to the administration to facilitate Abrego Garcia's return, and the administration doubling down on refusing to do so, and Trump falsely claiming that a photograph of Abrego Garcia's knuckles proved that he was an MS-13 gang member because it was written right there on his knuckles. Because Trump was shown a picture on which those letters and numbers MS-13 were clearly photoshopped onto his knuckles. Well, I'm sure you saw pieces of this many times by now, but I think the only time I saw the full clip was on John Oliver's HBO show a week or two ago, and it's worth hearing in full because Trump really, really, really seems to believe that Abrego Garcia has those actual letters and numbers on his tattooed on his knuckles. And ABC's Terry Moran didn't even want to talk about it, wanted to move on to something else because Trump was so obviously wrong about it. Moran was actually trying to help Donald Trump out by trying to move on, but Trump would just not let him.
He wasn't a member of a gang. And then they looked, and right, on his knuckles, he had MS-13.
There's a dispute
over
that.
Wait a minute. He had MS-13 on his knuckles tattooed.
Oh, he had some tattoos that are interpreted that way, but let's move on.
Wait a minute. Terry.
He did not have the letter MS-13.
It says MS-13.
That was photoshopped.
That was photoshopped, Terry. You can't do that. Hey, they're giving you the big break of a lifetime. You know, you're doing the interview. I picked you because, frankly, I never heard of you, but that's okay. I picked you, Terry. But you're not being very nice. He had MS-13 tattooed.
We'll agree to disagree. I want to move on to something else.
Terry, do you want me to show you the picture?
I saw the picture.
You think it was photoshopped?
Well, here we go.
Don't Photoshop it. Go look at his hand. He had MS-13.
He did have tattoos that can be interpreted that way. I'm not an expert on them. I want to turn to Ukraine,
Terry, I want to get to Ukraine. No. He had MS, as clear as you can be, not interpreted. This is why people no longer believe the news, because it's fake news.
When he was photographed in El Salvador, they aren't there. But let's just go. They aren't there when he's in El Salvador.
Oh, they weren't there, but they're there now, right?
No,
but
they're now. In your picture.
Terry.
Ukraine, sir.
He's got MS-13 on his knuckles.
All right.
Okay.
Right. Well, we'll take a look.
You do such a disservice.
We'll take a look at
Why
that,
sir. Why don't you just say it? Yes, he does, and you know, go on to something else.
It's contested.
I mean, that went on forever.
Yeah. Trump does not understand captions.
And Moran was trying to do him a favor, saying, oh, let's move on. No, let's keep talking about it. He was totally wrong. And Moran, frankly, should have let him bring out the picture because it's so obvious that, you know, that's photoshopped onto the photo. It's meant to claim, you know, that his knuckle tattoos actually represent the letter M and S and 1 and 3. Not that he actually had it on his knuckles, but Trump does not know that. And because Trump, you know, because he simply lies or he says something ridiculous or he just does not know something, everyone in the administration then must go along with it. As we saw, incredibly, in a House Homeland Security Committee hearing on Wednesday when California Congressman Eric Swalwell had that photo of Trump holding the photo of Abrego Garcia's knuckles with the letters MS13 clearly photoshopped on top of them, and in an utterly surreal exchange, Swalwell asked Donald Trump's Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, about it, and this happened.
I want you to have credibility and be taken seriously as you do the job, and so I want to put to rest this question about Mr. Garcia and this photo that the president posted on April 21. Madam Secretary, you agree that the letters MS and the number 13 in Times Roman numeral font, that they are doctored on this photo, right?
Congressman Abrego Garcia.
No, I'm just asking about this photo.
It wasn't based off of tattoos. It was based off an entire case.
And I'll accept that
case against him.
For the purpose of this question, you agree, though, that this is doctored. Is that right?
The same protocols that are
applied
to every
individual. I want you to have credibility, and I want you to be taken seriously. Is this doctored or is it not doctored?
I am taken quite seriously.
Is it doctored or not doctored?
The importance that the president has given me to do.
I understand. Is it doctored or not doctored?
One thing that's important to remember is that every single time a case is built.
Madam Secretary, I have a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old. I have a bullshit detector. I'm just asking you, is this doctored or not doctored?
Sir. The protocols in the case built against
Can you answer the question?
Were exactly the same.
Madam Secretary,
I don't have any knowledge as to that photo you're pointing to.
Okay. Can you take
I don't,
her,
sir,
can you show
I...
her the photo? Walk her the photo down there. No, that one. Please take a look at this photo. It was tweeted by the president on April 21. It's been hanging out there for about a month.
So what is your point?
My question is the numbers and the letter MS-13. Could you look at the photo, please? It's right in front of
you. Are you saying Abrego Garcia is not a wife
no.
beater?
No, ma'am.
But he's not a criminal.
Ma'am.
He's not a human trafficker. And he's not a member of MS-13.
You vouched for Mr. Garcia
you're
when your team said, ma'am, you vouched for him when you said he was mistakenly
criminal.
Deported.
Sir,
I didn't vouch for him.
I did not say
in that.
That
he photo.
He should have been deported. Absolutely.
It's so telling that you won't look at the photo.
And we will not be bringing
was it doctored or not?
If, in staying here, if
can you look to your
to
right
country,
at the photo in front
right
of you?
Away.
Madam Secretary, can you look to the right at the photo in front of you?
I have seen this photo as you held it behind your head.
Thank you. And the letters MS and the numbers 13, are those
is
doctored
this your
or not?
Testimony today is on a doctored photo. You don't want to talk about the facts.
Okay.
The importance
so you,
of our national security.
You acknowledge
what
it was
do
doctored.
To make sure that the United States is protected.
Madam Secretary, this is not a hard question. Are those doctored or not?
Sir,
is that actually on his hand or not?
This is unbelievable to me that you're focused.
It's unbelievable to me
that
you can't look at the photo and tell the American people.
I looked at the photo, but I don't have any knowledge as to this photo.
Okay, so it's been hanging out there for 4 weeks. You are one of the chief law enforcement officials in the country. What have you done to investigate whether the president misrepresented the reason that that person has been detained?
Sir,
have you done anything to try and figure out whether that was doctored or not?
The mission of the Department of Homeland Security is to secure our nation.
It's surreal. It's insane. It's a mad world that we are now living in. Sometimes you just have to sort of stop and take stock and breathe it all in. See the forest for the trees to see where we are. As the excellent New York-based writer and lawyer and social media poster called Southpaw wrote last night on Blue Sky, we have a government that's engaged in human trafficking, that's openly allowing a Gulf petrostate to bribe its leadership, that's reshaping the refugee program in overtly racist terms, that's almost ended American foreign aid entirely, that's doing its level best to crash the economy from the Rose Garden, that's encouraging a completely avoidable measles epidemic, that's tearing the guts out of scientific research nationwide, that's inaugurating a golden age for predatory lenders and financial scammers, that's deliberately destroying NATO, that's wholesale abandoning climate change policy, that's deliberately degrading food and drug safety regulations, air traffic control systems, and the security of personal data held by the government, that's crusading against America's world-beating university system, that's trying to obtain territorial concessions from our longtime military allies. You get the idea, he writes. It's kaleidoscopically bad, almost impossible to list all the wrong that they're doing with any reasonable degree of completeness, and virtually nothing to date is getting better fast enough. But it is not like we were not all warned about all of this. I do feel like I did my part. I've been warning about a Republican Party going off the rails for more than 20 years now. And when I started, doesn't happen as much anymore, but I used to be called a partisan Democrat. I was not then nor now a Democrat, and none of this has to do with partisanship. It has to do with our constitutional democratic republic and those who have captured it and are now breaking it for, I don't know, fun or profit. I've been trying to get to this all week, frankly, but retired Supreme Court Justice David Souter, a New Hampshire Republican who became a favorite of progressives over the years during his nearly 20 years on the high court, he died last week at his home at the age of 85. He retired from the court in June of 2009. He was appointed first by Republican President George H.W. Bush in 1990, but he became a reliably liberal vote on things like abortion and the separation between church and state, freedom of expression, and the accessibility of federal courts. Souter also dissented from the decision in Bush v. Gore back in 2000, which effectively handed the presidency to George W. Bush, the son of the man who put him on the high court. And in my opinion, has led us directly to the road that we are now on. And while liberals were delighted with a justice that they initially feared, conservatives, so-called conservatives, turned on David Souter's appointment. And they turned that into a rallying cry in the years that followed, quote, no more Souters. And that fueled their successful drive to move the court farther and farther to the right. In retirement, Souter warned that ignorance of how government works could, in fact, undermine American democracy. Here he was in 2012, in the pre-Trump era, warning about, well, pretty much exactly what we have ended up with.
What I worry about is that when problems are not addressed, people will not know who is responsible. And when the problems get bad enough, as they might do, for example, with another serious terrorist attack, as they might do with another financial meltdown, some one person will come forward and say, give me total power and I will solve this problem. That is how the Roman Republic fell. Augustus became emperor not because he arrested the Roman Senate. He became emperor because he promised that he would solve problems that were not being solved. If we know who is responsible, I have enough faith in the American people to demand performance from those responsible. If we don't know, we will stay away from the polls. We will not demand it. And the day will come when somebody will come forward and we and the government will in effect say, take the ball and run with it. Do what you have to do. That is the way democracy dies.
Someone will come forward. That is the way democracy dies. That was former Supreme Court Justice David Souter, who died last week at the age of 85. Prescient, speaking there in 2012, we should have seen this monster coming. And frankly, if we didn't, it is our own fault. At least Justice Souter tried to warn us. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. All right. You're up, Desi Doyen. I've exhausted myself.
Yes.
Turn it over to you for our latest Green News Report.
Eliminating consumer energy credits while preserving corporate loopholes isn't fiscal responsibility. It's a giveaway to the ultra wealthy and a betrayal of working families.
House Republicans' budget proposal effectively kills the Inflation Reduction Act's clean energy incentives. Trump EPA to roll back first ever limits on forever chemicals in drinking water. Plus,
this is a time of profound opportunity for our nation.
Australia's Labor Party wins big, doubling down on climate commitments.
Well, that's good to hear. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
For the Endangered Species Act, we're going to constrain what that means so that you can actually build things without wondering what's going to happen to the caterpillars.
And by constrain it, she means kill it, just like the caterpillars. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, first we had good news on elections out of Canada. Now we got them out of Australia.
Yes, we do. I am late getting to this, but in Australia, the Labor Party's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese secured a rare second term in a landslide election on May 3rd, with voters supporting a rapid shift to renewable energy and rejecting the Conservative Party's plans to slash investments in renewables and instead expand nuclear energy.
Excellent.
In his victory speech, Albanese reiterated his government's commitment to climate action for the benefit of all Australians.
Every Australian who knows that climate change is a challenge we must act together to meet for the future of our environment, and knows the fact that renewable energy is an opportunity we must work together to seize for the future of our economy.
Here in the U.S., the Trump Environmental Protection Agency announced this week that it will roll back the first ever limits on 4 of 6 toxic PFAS forever chemicals that are contaminating water supplies across the country, rules that were set in place by the Biden administration. PFAS chemicals are used in a host of consumer products and industrial applications and don't break down in the environment. Even low levels of PFAS chemicals are linked to cancers, autoimmune diseases, developmental defects, and more. Politico reports that the move is a victory for chemical manufacturers.
Can I move to Australia?
Like the company Chemours, which has been discharging PFAS chemicals directly into North Carolina's Cape Fear River for years. Meanwhile, a new analysis by Grist finds that since Donald Trump's inauguration, the EPA has all but stopped enforcing environmental laws against polluters.
Which part of environmental protection Do you Trump folks now running the EPA not understand?
In politics, House Republicans' draft budget proposal effectively guts most of the clean energy incentives in former President Biden's historic climate law, the Inflation Reduction Act. Republicans eliminate more than $500 billion in clean energy tax credits to pay for massive tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. The cuts include incentives that had triggered a clean energy manufacturing boom across the country. But no cuts to the fossil fuel industry's billions in annual taxpayer subsidies.
Go figure.
Environmental groups warn that the GOP budget proposal will pave the way for more oil and gas extraction on the public's lands and increase planet warming emissions that drive dangerous man-made climate change.
Emphasis on pave.
Americans are already grappling with accelerating climate impacts. In Texas, forecasters say a dangerous, unusually early extreme heat wave this week is a prelude to what's expected to be an abnormally hot summer nationwide.
Yay!
A new study finds that the rate of global sea level rise is accelerating faster and faster, increasing the frequency of high tide flooding on the East Coast. And a recent NASA analysis found sea level rise was unexpectedly high last year. But states are fighting back.
Yay.
In a new round of lawsuits, 17 states have sued the Trump administration, charging it is unlawfully withholding billions of dollars already appropriated by Congress for building electric vehicle charging infrastructure projects across the country. In a different action, a coalition of 15 states sued the Trump administration over its declaration of an energy emergency, used to justify ordering agencies to illegally bypass required reviews of polluting fossil fuel projects. The states argue there is no emergency.
Energy emergency. Oh, please. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
But don't fool me. Don't you let it be. The state of emergency. Yeah.
Yeah, we got a state of emergency, all right. Just not the ones that Donald Trump is pretending that we have.
Yeah, we got a long time to go.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download all of them for free anytime at bradblog.com. That's made possible thanks to those of you who hit a donate button over there or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. We could really use your support. Now is a great time to hit one of those donate buttons and help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You will find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. You'll find Desi Doyen over there as well
at Green News Report.
There you go. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.